So what, how do we fall prey to these six ways of becoming influenced? The first is by God's permission. In fact, no demonic activity can occur without God's permission. Since God is able to allow anyone to fall prey in this way, it should not be assumed that if one does fall prey, it is necessarily because of something he has done. As a result, falling prey to this kind of demonic activity is not a sign of someone's state of soul. God sets the entire rules for the engagement. Okay, so what does this mean? It means that people can become possessed through no fault of their own. I know people like that. They haven't done anything wrong yet. They became possessed. God allowed it because he wanted certain things to occur. Sometimes people are targeted. I know a particular individual who was targeted because of a particular grace that they had. This person is possessed, and we're going on the fifth month of trying to get it straightened out. There are, which that actually brings up a particular interesting point, which I'll probably discuss a little bit later. But it can be through no fault of their own. Usually it's because people do something evil, but that it can be through no fault of their own. It's all because God allows it, and usually allows because there's something that he wants accomplished. The possession or any kind of demonic influence whatsoever is entirely determined by God, not only to the degree of the possession, the degree of the influence, but even how they're influenced, what they can do. One of the things that you do in exorcism is you try and beat out a demon, what was the cause, in case there's something that you can undo to undo the cause, to break the possession. You know, what's your name, what rank you in, when are you going to leave, what sign is there, and the reason being is the demons know the cause, they know when they're leaving, they know very often with the exorcist. I have a case right now where the possession was the demons were telling me things through her before she even met me. It's only later that we began to discover that this was, it was only much later we discovered that they were actually not talking to her, they were talking to me. So they can actually know who the exorcist is going to be, they know when they're going to get booted out, how it's going to be done, etc. So this is something that is, God determines the rules of engagement. They can't do things outside of that. God won't let them do it. The second is by being subject to an evil spell or curse. A curse or spell is the intention of harming others through demonic intervention. In these cases, a person, again, is not culpable for falling prey since it is done by another person using the demons. This is why things such as witchcraft, sorcery, spells, bindings, evil eyes, and maledictions are so dangerous. And by maledictions, we mean even when parents curse their children. I know a gentleman who's possessed now because his father cursed him. This has become very problematic in the last 40 years, and particularly in the last 10 years, with the rise of witchcraft among teenagers and feminists. It's become a serious problem, especially among teenage girls that are kind of getting involved in it because it's kind of a fad in certain places. There is sometimes a distinction made between two kinds of witchcraft: white witchcraft and dark witchcraft, and even that is distinguished in two distinctions. What does that mean? Well, it means this. There's a distinction that says, well, there's white witchcraft, which is actually just, you know, where you fake things. You know, you do this magic, and you fake, you know, making the ball disappear, but in point of fact, all it did was go down into the table, etc. And that type of magic is perfectly acceptable. I mean, it has a legitimate entertainment value, and there's nothing wrong with it as long as somebody doesn't intend anything disordered by it. But then that's distinguished from black magic, which is trying to get demons involved in order to achieve something. That is distinct from another distinction which is made. You'll very often hear between which witches. They'll say, I'm a white witch, which means I use witchcraft in order to achieve good things. It's not how it works. And whereas black witch is one who does evil things. That's just not how it works. Any time you make use of incantations and things like that to bring something about to say, well, this is power of nature. No, it's not. Nature doesn't have the capacity to do these things. If it did, it would be part of physical laws and we'd be able to figure it out and do it. It doesn't do that. Rather, this is a case of somebody performing some type of act of witchcraft and then as a result, hoping that, I want to make my boyfriend fall in love with me, so we do this little thing that, you know, little Miss Wicca over here has told them to do, and so they do this. And very often it ends up with people having a possessed sort of all sorts of physical problems and that type of thing. And the point of fact is just bad. The church has always systematically condemned that, even from good intentions. Another way that people can become demonically influenced is by a grave and hardened state of sin. For example, sexual perversions, violence, drug use, abortion. Abortion is a very common one. Women who have had abortions very often are obsessed. And one of the things that's common to see, not always, is that when a woman has an abortion, if she becomes demonically influenced, that will affect the subsequent children in the womb. This is one of the reasons why I just literally will scream at a priest if he tells me that you don't have to do the exorcisms of children. It needs to be slaps taken off of Dean Sylvia. Because I've seen child after child brought to me because of the fact that the priest skipped the exorcisms in the baptisms. And two children become possessed in the womb by witchcraft and other things. It can also be caused by things such as homosexuality. Homosexuality is actually rooted in a disassociation. It's a part of the text that I'm writing right now. But it's rooted in a disassociation. And very often it can't be broken unless there's certain things done. Living in irregular marriages, committing violent actions, superstitious practices, indirect invocations of the demonic, and hypnotism, these are just to name a few. With the increase in abortions and the collapse of married life, many souls are being afflicted. Other cases which authors mention are balls, now called discotheques, that was in the 70s, but certain kinds of dancing and that type of thing can bring people under that influence. And not all balls, I mean by balls we mean, you know, like, it can be legitimate where they do certain forms of ballroom dancing, which can be graceful and actually teach modesty, etc. There's nothing wrong with that, but here they're talking about dancing that's disordered. Modern forms of music, very common. Very, very common. Jordan Allman remarks in a quote already given that a person may come under the power of the devil by reason of a habitual practice of evil, or, and here's the big one, an uncontrolled desire to experience extraordinary mystical phenomena or to receive charismatic graces. Now that is extremely important. A charismatic grace there's a specific Latin term, but it basically means it's a gratuitous gift given by the Holy Ghost. You cannot ask for charismatic graces and receive them. They are not subject to merit. You can't ask for them and get them. All you can do is dispose yourself if God wants to give you one, fine. And they do exist, but they're extremely rare. So this is something that's very important. To seek something supernatural in a disordered fashion is called superstition. And that's what a large segment of the charismatic renewal is founded on. Not all, but a lot of it. And so I have seen countless people who have become under demonic influence from charismatic practices. One of which is in the position of hands. Now, the priest can impose his hands because they've been anointed. They're sacramentals. That's why they can be venerated by kissing them. And so when he imposes it on, if the demons are there, it drives them nuts and they want to get out. If it's a layman, well, they haven't been anointed, you might as well stick forks on your head. It's going to have the same effect. It's a superstitious practice for a layman to impose hands on somebody. And this is one of the reasons why people become demonically influenced as a result of it. Not everybody does, but some people do. I've known people who become oppressed, obsessed, the whole bit, as a result of it. In these cases, the beginning part of the remedy is clear. So when people have, when they have a grave part in the life of sin, it's clear. One has to have a conversion in life and go to confession regularly. In fact, confession is one of the most powerful things, even from the person who's possessed through no fault of their own. If they go to confession regularly, that really has a weakening effect on the demons. All sexually perverted activity, homosexuality, violence, drug use, abortion, violent actions, and superstitious practice, and direct invocations of demons have to cease, period. And by superstitious practice, I mean intentional or unintentional has to stop. Why is that important? Harry Potter. The books of Harry Potter were written with actual spells in them. There was a woman, in fact, in Spain, and you might have seen it on the internet, there was a woman in Spain who decided she was going to try and see if this spell by fire would actually work, so she did this, she said the spell and burned her house to her. The other thing is, too, and this is something that an exorcist told me, which I didn't discover on my own, this is something he discovered, that the actual names, not all of them, but the actual names in Harry Potter are names of demons that have been exorcised from people. Keep it away from your children, period. I know an exorcist who has exorcised 3 children who became possessed as a result of just reading it. Stay away from it. Now, you'll hear from time to time, priests, even some exorcists, there's nothing wrong with it. Don't listen to them. I'm telling you that from experience, from other experienced exorcists. Those living in irregular marriages must either get them regularized or repudiate the marriage. Parents must also keep watch over the kinds of music to which their children listen. This applies to panic forms, but also those which affect people's appetites by increasing their appetites. What does that mean? If people get some emotional buzz out of it, it has to be tempered. Because if it's not tempered, then what happens is it becomes kind of an addiction. How do you know that? Well, how do you know that, that it's an addiction? Well, it's easy. Tell the person to stop listening to it. And usually they're like, I don't want to stop listening to it. The broad signs of divine. Okay, but here's some of the broader signs. You can kind of see that, okay, something wrong here. The first is the spirit of falsity. The devil is the father of lies, but he cleverly conceals his deceit by half-truths and pseudo-mystical phenomena. So if a person is just lying to you all the time, and lying all the time. Morbid curiosity. This is characteristic of those who eagerly seek out the esoteric aspects of mystical phenomena or have a fascination with the cult of preternatural. Apparition chasing is a serious problem. The minute people hear, Bessie Sue Kerfuffelwitz has had a vision of Our Lady, everyone piles over there to get the latest scoop. Wait until the church makes a judgment before you put any stock in that. Okay. And that's something that people have to be careful about. Confusion, anxiety, and deep depression. Depression is one of the clear signs of obsession. Obstinacy. In other words, a person just refuses to do something. This is one of the surest signs of a diabolic spirit. Constant indiscretion and a restless spirit. People will not pace back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I've known people who suffer from addictions, and after one exorcism, it's broken. Literally, the craving is completely broken, and their sleeping patterns immediately return. So that's one of the signs. Not everybody who has an addiction is possessed or obsessed. Those who constantly go to extremes, as in penitential exercises or apostolic activity, or neglecting their primary obligations to do some personal chosen work. Very often you see this. Once in a while you get somebody who's, they're actually demonic influence because the demons will cause them to neglect their state in life. That is, their duties at home or at work in order to do something at church. That has to be very careful. Not that you shouldn't do things at church, but it just has to be taken into consideration in relationship to your duties according to your state in life. Despair, lack of confidence, and discouragement, a chronic characteristic that alternates with presumption, vain security, and of unfounded optimism. Disobedience and hardness of heart, an impatience and suffering and stubborn resentment, uncontrolled passions and strong inclinations to sensuality, usually under the guise of mystical union. Hypocrisy, simulation. Simulation is when you do things that are fake or false in order to deceive people. And duplicity, excessive attachment to sensible consolations, particularly in the practice of prayer. That is one of the quickest ways to become demonically influenced. And this is a big problem with modernism today. Yeah, excessive attachment to sensible consolations. Now, here's the problem. The problem with sensible consolations is they occur in this bottle, which means demons can mimic it. Which is why you don't pay any attention to them, except insofar as if you get a consolation, use it to advance yourself towards God more. But you don't make it the mainstay. It is not the basis of judgment of where you're at in your spiritual life. Why? Well, I'm sorry, but the first thing that God does to people that he likes is he makes their life miserable. And that's because he has to purify them, because they've got problems. And it's the purification process is painful, not because of God, as John the Cross says, but because of something on our part. That usually means that if there comes a certain gut, we're like animals in a certain sense. Well, we're rational animals, but we're, kind of like animals. If you want the dog to do the trick, you give him the bone. You roll him over, you give him the bone. You roll him over, you give him the bone. And then eventually you just show him the bone, then he rolls over, right? Mm-hmm. And then eventually you just don't even show the bone, you tell him roll over, and he rolls over. That's what God has to do with us. So what does he do? Consensual consolation to the bone. He throws us these bones to get us to do this. It's a consolation, a lot of spiritual consolation, usually a sign you're in the beginning stages of your spiritual life. It's not a sign that you've advanced. And then what happens is there comes a certain point where it gets stricter than one time a seminarian came to me and he says, before I came here, I used to love going to chapel. I loved getting up and making visuals and things like that. And as soon as I got to the seminary, I can't hardly get out of bed. I can't stand it. I'm like, good. God is stripping you of it because he has to purify your will. He wants you to do these things because you love him, not because you're getting the sensible cookie out of it. Now, because demons can act upon that, if people are making the sensible consolations the mainstay of their judgment of their spiritual life, they can get drugged all over the map and drugged into all sorts of the wrong areas because it feels good. This is the biggest problem with modernism. The foundational principle of modernism is judgment of spiritual things based upon self. How I feel about it, how I look about it, how I judge about it, how I. The minute that happens, It's going to destroy people's spiritual lives because they will not be doing mortification, penance, and things of that sort. It also destroys charity because charity doesn't always come with warm fuzzies. Very often charity is something born in pain. So this is one of the reasons why people have to be really careful about that. Then there is also a lack of a deep devotion to Jesus and Mary. An abhorrence for things that are holy and spiritual is very often a sign of demonic influence. A scrupulous adherence to the letter of the law and a fanatical zeal in promoting a cause. This is characteristic, readily opens the door to diabolic influence in reformers and demagogues. Now, that kind of comes with kind of an interesting thing. Because if you read some of the things about Martin Luther's life, the guy was obviously diabolically influenced in certain aspects. So those are the signs, those are the kinds, and those are the signs. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk about how you keep these things at bay, and if you become influenced, how you get rid of them. Okay? Because not everybody who has these problems has to go to an exorcist. Okay? And it's important to know, too, because there are certain things that priests can do without being a designated exorcist. Okay? Any questions?
Yeah. ADD, you mentioned bipolar. ADD, how would that
Well, ADD can be caused by three things. It's actually in my book. It can be caused from physiological indisposition. I had a friend when I grew up, the kid was just extremely hyperactive, and all his other brothers were normal, but he was extremely hyperactive, and it's just a physiological disposition he has. The guy hardly sleeps, he just eats constantly, he spins around, and it's just his physiological constitution. It can also be caused through certain psychological things. By something that gives you repeated and rapid images, watching TV. It gives you constant and rapid images, and so what happens is your faculties become habituated to those rapid images. So as soon as you step out from behind that, your faculties are habituated to having those rapid images, and when they don't get it, the faculties are like, there's something wrong here, and so the person gets fidgety. So that's one of the things I tell people, if you don't watch TV, there's nothing wrong with watching TV, but it has to be moderated. The second thing, and the last one, is it can be from a demonic cause. And not all of it is. In kids, my experience is that most of it's not divine. You know, even though they'll bring the kid and say, you know, would you exercise this kid? And I'm like, well, that's not really the problem. It's usually too much TV, too much time in front of the computer, too many video games, that's really not because these things are evil, but simply because they're unmoderated and people aren't being careful with them. Yeah.
You repeat the question. On the audio, do you do it all?
I'm sorry?
Are you going to put any of your books into an audio format someday?
A lot of it actually is on my website. So you can actually go to my website. It's a Latin word, it's a Latin phrase, census360.org. If you can get that, you're pretty good.
I don't know how to spell that.
Yeah, well, what I'll do is I'll make sure that a card or something is put in the back with that. And so much of the stuff that's in my book is actually on there. Some of the things I'm dealing with in these conferences, I'm giving them in other places that are being recorded. And so they will be available on the internet eventually. Yes?
Father, there seems to be an increase in autism in children, mm-hmm. and also Asperger's.
Yeah.
What about that?
They can be, but I don't think most of those are. I think those are more physiological ways. My own impression is that the autism, even though some states say it is, some states say it is, but I don't think you've always got to get most of that from vaccines. It's the mercury in the vaccines is the problem.
And also, I teach in the Catholic middle school, and the kids are reading Harry Potter in the new 7 days now called Twilight.
Yes.
And I have told my kids when we've gone through confession that they need to confess that they've been reading Harry Potter. And they come back and tell me that the priest said that was okay for us to read it.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend for teachers and parents? How do we direct our kids away from that?
Well, when I told them, people become possessed as a result of reading and being involved in it. The other thing is, too, is that if you read Father Amore, that he has some, he's the head exorcist in Rome, he has some stuff on the internet talking about Harry Potter where he tells people don't get involved in it, stay away from it. So, you know, the irony of it is that people will listen to an exorcist because they realize, well, this guy deals with stuff that's kind of weird. And if you just tell people, look, this is what happens if people get involved with it, usually very often they'll stay away from it, unless the person has an inordinate attachment from it, to it. The book's twilight, I usually tell people to try and avoid for different reasons, which I would be happy to discuss with you if you want to come and talk to me privately. But this morning has more to do along the lines of, I don't really think people should be filling their kids' heads with romantic mush when they're not in a state in which they can really adequately deal with it. That's really the problem I see with it more than anything else. But again, I haven't read this one. Yes?
Well, Pope Leo XIII put out an exorcism prayer for the end of the 19th century.
Right.
That is being circulated now, given to priests that people can do that. Is
right.
that allowed?
Yes, a priest can use that prayer without faculties.
Yeah. Over a person?
Yes.
Over a person. A priest can do that.
Yes, he can, and this is something I've investigated so many different times only because I just wanted to make sure that when Rome said the priest could not use when canon law says that they cannot exorcise a person without faculties, that pertains to what's called chapter 2. That's the formal exorcism, not a private exorcism, which can make use of that chapter or that prayer, that St. Michael prayer is what it's sometimes called. So priests can use that over people and over things without faculties. And usually that's one of the things I tell people, you know, when you have somebody who comes into confessional year after year after year and you just cannot make a particular sin, just say, look, I have a blessing and command, I'll give it to you, and it will help in this regard. And very often, if they receive it over the course of a few months, it breaks it. So recidivism can easily be broken that way. Lay people cannot say that prayer. I know it's on the internet, you know, they tell people to say it, but the Vatican has forbidden lay people to say that prayer. And with reasons, justification. By being a priest, there's certain protection, just by virtue of being a priest, the church protects you, and the priesthood itself is a certain level of protection. I've known people that have used that prayer who weren't priests, and they got just beat around, spiritually. So I tell people to stay, you know, there's other prayers you can say, you know, the normal prayer of St. Michael, which is a little short one, but you can't say that long one, which was limited by Leo XIII. So, yeah.
There's plenty of different ways that parents can curse their children. Is it actually something demonic, or can they just kind of have a grudge or a hatred?
It's not just the feeling. It has to be something they do or say, like, you know, I curse you, or, you know, I wish I never had had you, or something like that, or you were an unwanted pregnancy, or something like that.
Right, so that's a curse.
Yeah, so those kinds of, or you just curse the person, you know, may God damn you. That would be an example of it. So if they, that's a curse very often, or God cursed you, that can cause it.
So yeah. I was being a member of a fraternity or a secret society,
the question is whether being a member of a secret society or something of that sort, a secret fraternity, will be actually coming into my influence. The answer is yes. There's a set of prayers, which I have, which very often I pass to priests, which they people will, that if they have been demonically influenced, and there's a few kinds of demons I need to talk about tomorrow called generational spirits. But basically, a generational spirit is one which can be passed on from parent to kid. And so if a father gets involved in say, Freemasonry, it can cause a child to have demonic influence. And there's a set of prayers which I give often to priests, and they'll, like if someone has had, they're having problems, and it's obviously they have some kind of demonic influence, one of the questions I'll ask is, there any Freemason in your past history? If there is, and I say, give this set of prayers and save them. And very often that'll break it. So, because too, there's certain things that they do that are, I mean, at the highest levels, Freemasonry is just Satanism. So, even though they try to portray themselves as a brotherly and fraternal order, it's anything but, ultimately. So, yes.
Does holy water help protect your house from grief?
Yeah, the stuff that protects and wards them off, we'll talk about a number of those tomorrow. There's a whole lot of things that a lot of Catholics don't know much about. So. Yes.
So, imagine what if someone like Jeremiah writes verses of this country, what effect does that have on the nation and what way to prevent it?
Well, usually, in order for the curse to have some effect, there usually has to be some form of authority or joint relationship to things. Usually, not always, but usually. Like, so if he doesn't have any real authority over it, it's not going to probably have much of an effect. And most of those kinds of things, he's too big for his britches, really. I mean, he's not. But There are cases in which, though, where an example of authority where men, where Freemasons are in charge of setting up a state, and they'll actually do certain things to curse the state. And so the state will have, you know, particular chronic problems and areas. That can be broken. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about, so if I don't start off with it, somebody remind me. But I'm going to talk about things like demons in the air and that type of thing, and you begin to realize that even when people use vulgarity, you can empower demons to take possession of error. Now, this is going to have a significance. I'll explain what that actually means. It's actually, demons in the air are mentioned in Scripture. They're mentioned by Our Lady of Lourdes. They're mentioned in a number of different places. But they can actually curse certain places, but bishops can do the opposite. They can actually bless a particular place to keep demonic influence out. So, in fact, very often what will happen is it's very common if there's a witch living in a particular neighborhood, there's an exorcism which a priest can do where he actually exorcises and blesses a particular house, but everything else within 100 yards of it. If the witch is living within that, immediately the effect is a witchcraft doesn't have any effect. She'll know it right off the bat. She'll have to leave. She realizes it doesn't work anymore. But the point being is that bishops and priests and that type of thing can actually bless houses. They should be blessing people's houses regularly and that type of thing to keep this stuff at bay. Again, not because demons are under every rock. But that's one of the principal failings of spiritual fathers, to protect their spiritual children from demonic. They might provide the sacraments, they may do all this thing. Very often they'll find, you know, I'm providing confession for these people, I'm blessing them, I'm doing all these things, but it's not having this effect. You say, well, are you getting rid of the demonic stuff? I mean, if you're not getting rid of that, you're only providing half of it. The fact that also brings up the fact that the principal function of the head of the household is to provide and protect. That's the principal function of a man, to provide and protect. Not just physically and financially, but spiritually. He provides by praying, suffering, doing good works, mortification, to merit the graces for those people, for his family's wife. He protects them by keeping demons out of the house. That failing is categorically the most systematic failing of men across the board, even the best of them. And that's one of the reasons why there was a group called Exhumed Christian Rome, we'll be talking about that tomorrow, was established because guys are failing in that regard. So there are two exorcists established this group so that it would provide protection for families. So anyway, that's stuff we'll talk about more tomorrow. Yes? Yeah, again, you're back to... I don't know if he actually said that or not. It's just something I haven't been able to track down. But again, you're back to the issue of, well, are you going to take the practical experience of people who are dealing with the fallout, or are you going to take with somebody who's only kind of making an initial assessment of it? And that's really the problem. Most people are like, oh, it doesn't seem that bad. It's just a piece of fiction. The problem is it's a bit more than that. And that's the real difficulty. There was a group of exorcists that met, and one of the priests that was there, who doesn't really seem to know a whole lot, even though he seems to have a good name, a big name, said that, oh yeah, there's nothing with Harry Potter. And one of this priest that exorcised the three kids stood up and just said, that is just absolutely false. And he started telling what happened as a result of this. And as soon as that guy sat down, all the priests clapped. Then the other exorcists clapped. And they said, yeah, that's been our experience with this thing, too. So, yeah.
Well, you mentioned about the charismatic renewal, and you kind of hedged, which gave me the impression that there are aspects of the charismatic renewal that, you know, you have no problems with. And you know that both our present Holy Father and also John Paul were supportive of the renewal.
Yeah.
I am really, where I'm coming from is I'd like to know what aspects you have been concerned about and why.
The principal things I have concerns about is they're seeking charismatic graces, like speaking in tongues and that type of thing. Let me give you an example of speaking in tongues. There was a guy who, he was one of these polyglots, he knew like 30-some languages, and somebody invited him to the charismatic meetings, you know, to interpret what was going on. So he's sitting there, and they start the speaking in tongues music, gets up and walks out. And so someone comes up and says, well, why did you leave? He says, well, this particular individual was saying this, he was crazy and saying, this particular individual was actually gibberish. This particular, and he went down the litany, and basically what it meant is that certain people were doing things that were disordered. the gift, and two, they very often have a flawed understanding of what these gifts are for. The gift does not say anything about the individual. It's not meant for the individual. It's not meant to idle, to you know, fall around and play around either. It's actually, the charismatic gifts are designed to build up the church. And that means that by building up the church, like the apostles had, they could speak the languages in order to communicate to people the gospel. The gift of interpretation isn't just hearing something and saying, I think it means it's not that at all. The person actually understands the language. If you have the gift of interpretation, you have to understand the language. And why? Why is the gift of interpretation? Why does St. Paul says you must have somebody interpreting when there's somebody speaking in tongues? Why? Because in the Old Testament, you have to have two witnesses to guarantee the authenticity of the message. Well, if the guy really doesn't know, or if it's just going on feeling, by feeling saying, I'm sorry, but you're just opening yourself up. So the seeking of those charismatic graces is disorder, it's superstitious, and that's why I tell people to avoid it. Again, because I'm dealing with the fallout of it. There are certain aspects of the charismatic renewal that I think are well-intentioned, though. I think the people generally who are in it are trying to be good people. I think the people want to lead a better spiritual life. But I tend to think that the charismatic renewal is the product of the collapse of the spiritual life in the church. If the church is providing the devotions and the spiritual means by which people would be finding their spiritual fulfillment, they wouldn't be going around seeking stuff that's not Catholic. And that's the thing that that has my biggest concern about. It's principally pursuing the gifts, which are the gift of healing and things like that, which are really a problem with laying on of hands. It's just fine. Unless it's a priest, I just don't want to see it being done. I mean, I'll give you an idea of how this. There was one time there was this guy who was possessed, and they were having a hard time getting rid of this demon. So the exorcist took him to a bishop. And when the bishop imposed hands on the guy that was possessed, his voice changed to the demon's name, to the demon's voice. And the demon said, ooh, these hands are harder than the other ones. So, but the point being is what? I mean, because sometimes demons will try and throw you off by being funny. And, I mean, they try everything, absolutely everything. And they know your weaknesses, so they'll try and they'll really go after those. But the point being is that because the bishop's hands are then more powerful because he's a bishop, because they've been consecrated as priesthood. I think they can do it when he's a consecrated bishop, right? So that is it's a different kind of a thing. It's a sacramental. The priest's hands are sacramentals. Lay people's hands just aren't. So that's why I tell people just, you know, avoid those kinds of things. The good thing about charismatics is that they realize there's a devil and they've got to do something about it. The problem is how they're going about it. Because they can get themselves into more trouble than they actually end up, than they can help. So, okay, and we need to cut this off, because apparently it's getting late. So if everyone will kneel, I'll give you a blessing and we'll resume tomorrow morning. Benedicta de omnipotentis, patris et filius, et spiritus sanctus, super vos et manet semper. Amen.